Prominent Utah pollster Dan Jones retires. Members of the Clearfield Community Church try and move on after a devastating fire. And the University of Utah plans to bring science to prisons. You're listening to the KUER News Pod for Thursday, March 21st. I'm Brian Grimmett. Prominent Utah pollster Dan Jones is retiring from his position as political science professor at the University of Utah. Jones is stepping down after more than 50 years of teaching, but says he will continue his work in political polling. KUER's Andrea Smartin reports.
The end of Dan Jones' teaching career was marked by a crowd of politicians, academics, and students at the U's Hinckley Institute of Politics. The Institute's director, Kirk Jowers, says Jones has changed thousands of lives in Utah.
Dan Jones has had the largest impact of probably anyone in Utah on civic participation.
Jowers says Dan Jones is known all over the state for accurate and fair political polling, but also for his work with students. Jones says he measures his own success by the students he's helped to become more politically engaged.
To be able to teach for 52 years young people who wanted to learn, and especially to make themselves better citizens, that they could get involved in the process and not only vote, but run for office and help make public policy.
Senior Neela Pack is one of many students who says Dan Jones turned her on to politics.
Dr. Jones has literally been one of those perspective-changing professors for me. Going into school, I wasn't really thinking about politics. I was taking the class just for my requirement, and he really made me think about what civic duty is. I mean, he really opens your eyes to how much more power citizens have.
Pack says thanks to Dr. Jones, she's considering running for office herself. The Hinckley Institute of Politics is trying to raise $40,000 for a biography about Jones and his scholarship fund. Andrea Smartin, KUER News.
Members of Clearfield Community Church are working to keep their church going after a fire almost destroyed their building earlier this week. The church will hold its Sunday worship service in rented space just a few blocks away at Wasatch Elementary School. Former pastor Richard Axman says the homeschool group that met in the church will have to find another place, along with several other programs.
We have Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, Girl Scouts, three groups of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have Bible study groups from the church or from the community. We have men's activities. We have volleyball. We have a gymnasium. All those things will have to be suspended at the building for the time being.
And Axman says the loss is covered by insurance, says they could be back in the older part of their building in 6 to 8 weeks.
The University of Utah wants to bring science and sustainability into the state's prisons. The U is developing a project that would work with inmates on recycling, gardening, and composting, among other things. It's part of a trend toward environmental sustainability in prisons, the subject of a workshop at the university this week. With us today is the scientist who's working on the U's new program, Nalini Nadkarni. Nadkarni is a biologist, an ecologist, and the U's director of the Center for Science and Mathematics Education. So the university is hosting this workshop on sustainability in prisons. What does that mean?
Well, the Sustainability in Prisons project is actually kind of a confluence of what you might call strange bedfellows, scientists, conservationists, sustainability experts, and incarcerated men and women. The really quite simple idea is to bring those two together, to bring science and sustainability projects in the way of education, that is lectures, in the way of real projects such as captive rearing of endangered species, and in terms of sustainability projects such as gardens and beekeeping and so forth, and to bring them literally behind bars to engage men and women who are incarcerated in the enterprise of science and sustainability.
So you have some experience with this. Before you came to Utah, you were a professor at Evergreen State College in Washington, and you did work in prisons there. I think I read you were working with inmates on moss cultivation. How did it work, and what were the results?
Right. Again, it sounds kind of strange, but there's an ecological problem in the Pacific Northwest that involves the harvesting of mosses from old growth forests in the Pacific Northwest for the horticulture trade. And my research with moss showed that that moss doesn't just grow back quickly. It takes 2 to 3 decades. So I realized I needed to learn how to farm mosses, and I decided that maybe great partners in that enterprise would be prisoners, men and women who don't have access to nature or nurturing something or learning about science or getting involved with something bigger than they are. So I approached a small minimum security prison in Washington State, and the superintendent at the time thought that was a good idea. He thought it would keep the guys amused and get them engaged with something that would keep them out of trouble. And that's exactly what happened. Not only did I learn about the science of farming mosses through their help, but it turned out that the prisoners began having more social interactions, more positive interactions. Their violent infractions went down. And so we realized that we really had something there. And since then, that program has enlarged to include gardening, composting, water catchment, recycling, beekeeping, and captive rearing of animals of endangered species such as the Oregon spotted frog, the Taylor checkerspot butterfly, and about 30 species of endangered prairie plants that are now being brought out for restoration work in the community. So it turned out to be a really great idea.
So based on that experience and some of the success that you've seen, what do you want to do here in Utah?
We have one of the most fantastic science colleges of any in the nation, and to have some of those faculty members and graduate students provide lectures in our Utah state prisons here at Draper and at Gunnison. So we've engaged 20 different professors who are already lined up to give lectures at our state prisons or our county jails. We've lined up other partners. The Jordan River Commission is very interested in having these inmates raise riparian vegetation behind bars so that they can revegetate the river system. We've been speaking with staff at the Utah Department of Corrections, at the Salt Lake City County Jail System, and they are very open to this idea of bringing education, science, and sustainability to the men and women who are behind bars. So we still have some negotiations. We still have to work out the many logistical problems that you can imagine that come with bringing university people, community people into prisons. But based on the experiences that we've had in Washington State and other states, I'm confident that we'll be able to do the same kinds of things here.
Your research has focused on the ecology of tropical and temperate forest canopies in Costa Rica. You've gone on to do many things, and I know you've won numerous awards for your work, particularly for your work getting the public engaged in science. How did you go from forest canopies to Utah prisons? Why is public engagement a priority for you?
I think many scientists are now asking themselves the question of, well, I do my science, I publish my research in these scientific papers that other scientists read, but the state of the world is such that I think that for scientists, I think many of us are asking, what else can I do? What else should I be doing in terms of trying to improve the relationship that humans have with the world? And in my case, as an ecologist and an environmental scientist, I ask myself the question, what can I do to bring humans closer to nature, to make them appreciate and be better stewards of nature? I got a Guggenheim Fellowship in 2001 to explore how I could do that as a scientist, and I began then just trying out talking about trees, writing about trees in locales and venues that weren't sort of for the scientifically aware. And that's when I started going to prisons and churches and engaging rap singers to sing about trees and forest canopies to urban youth and so forth. And I have found that endlessly challenging and endlessly rewarding. And there's, I believe, no audience out there, no group of people out there who can't be made interested in nature and science and trees. But I just need to figure out how to make that link happen.
Nalini Nadkarni is the director of the Center for Science and Mathematics Education at the University of Utah. Thank you, Dr. Nadkarni.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Utah Congressman Chris Stewart presided over his first hearing yesterday as chair of the House Subcommittee on the Environment. He asked a panel of science experts their views on draft legislation that he's sponsoring that would encourage more balance on the Environmental Protection Agency's advisory panels. Stewart says professors, who make up most of those panels, can have conflicts of interest as well as industry experts.
It's okay for some of these members to have direct financial ties through grants or other financial, financial vehicles that the government use, and yet we so readily exclude those who have financial ties to the industry.
Stewart says some industry areas, such as fracking in oil and gas production, are changing so quickly that industry experts are likely to have more current information than academics. The Davis County Sheriff is looking for some public input on whether or not ankle monitors should be used to track people with special needs who are prone to wandering. The correctional facility in Farmington has used the ankle bracelets to monitor criminals on parole for many years, Deputy Sheriff Kevin Fielding suggests they have other uses as well, like locating elderly people with dementia.
Say it was a grandparent or an elderly parent, the first thing, of course, they're going to do is they're going to contact us by 911 or contact the local police agency. And if they could say, hey, there's a monitor on the person, we could send a signal out to that monitor and find out exactly where it's at.
Now, Fielding says the company that provides the devices has offered smaller and less intrusive monitors than ever before. Fielding notes law enforcement typically deploys a volunteer group and dozens of officers to find a person who's wandered off. He says monitors could save time and resources and quite possibly lives.
It's not a super big problem or anything. It's not that we'd have huge numbers, but what it can be is very, very frustrating. And when it's involving your family member, then it is a big deal.
Fielding says there are about 6 cases a year of impaired people wandering off in Davis County. The monitors would be offered to residents at a cost of about $4 a day.
The Environmental Protection Agency is working to clean up a diesel spill at Willard Bay State Park. A leak from the Chevron pipeline spilled more than 8,000 gallons of diesel fuel into a retention pond and a drainage ditch, but tests show the oil hasn't reached the reservoir. EPA says they hope to have it cleaned up before bird migrations begin this spring. The North Marina of Willard Bay is still closed because of the spill. Salt Lake City police have identified the man shot and killed by officers on Tuesday. He was Ronnie Manuel Ontiveros, 37 years old. Sergeant Sean Josephson says officers from an interagency task force had gone to the home in Salt Lake City to arrest a different man wanted for a parole violation. They say Ontiveros fired a gun at officers as they approached the house. They returned fire and killed him. The Salt Lake County District Attorney's Office has filed motions to dismiss 19 cases linked to one West Valley police officer. Prosecutors have determined they don't have enough credible evidence to win convictions in those cases. District Attorney Sim Gill says most of the cases are drug offenses. The officer is still working for the department, but officials are not releasing his name. The West Valley Police Department says it's asked for an independent investigation. Warren Jeff's privately owned compound in Hilldale, Utah, will be auctioned off to pay a civil judgment. A former member of Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Willie Jessup, sued Jeff's and other church leaders, alleging they arranged a break-in at his business. The defendants didn't respond to the suit, and a judge awarded Jessup a $30 million judgment. Jeff's was convicted of sexual assault involving 2 girls in his church, and he's now serving a life prison term in Texas. And finally, Allegiant Air announced plans for a new passenger service from Provo to Oakland yesterday. The company has already been flying from Provo to Mesa, Arizona, and says seats on those flights fill up quickly. But airport officials are also worried about spending cuts under the federal sequester that might force the FAA to close the control towers in Provo and Ogden. And that is your Key We Are News Pod for Thursday, March 21st. For the latest news and updates from around the state, check out our new free smartphone app that you can download for your iPhone or Android device. Till next time, I'm Brian Grimmett.